We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
To be honest, I would put myself in the same category as D-Wade.
Now Artest is jumped onto the scorer's table. Artest is in the stands.
This man was a bona fide scrub. He can't play.
When I go to the writers to tell me who can guard in this league, I'll put a gun to my own head.
Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast. It is Thursday, August 15th. Nick Whalen here. Not only with just Alex Barutha, but with James Anderson as well. A rare three-man podcast. A ton to get to today. We want to discuss the composite rankings that we put up on the site yesterday. All three of us, as well as Shannon McCune, submitted our rankings that comprise those. We'll talk a little bit about some of the betting opportunities with the season still a little over 2 months away. Title odds, number one seed odds, MVP, and then some of our own props as well. But a couple news items to get to before we dive into that. Adrian Wojnarowski, about an hour ago, tweeted that Boogie Cousins may have suffered a knee injury 3 days ago. Kind of a strange report. You know, the wording was very cautious. I think Woj said he has a possible knee injury, and it would have been sustained during a workout back on Monday. So I read into it a little more, dug up some more tweets. Initially, you know, basically when Woj tweets something like that, he usually doesn't tweet out, you know, oh, the guy just has a bruised thigh. But there were other tweets and then a story that Woj ended up putting up on ESPN that said that it's a knee-to-knee type of injury. So, you know, of course, that could still lead to something more serious. But my initial thought, you know, was, you know, given the injuries that Boogie's had, you know, you immediately think ACL, meniscus, something like that. Hopefully it's not anything that serious, but I mean, we've talked before, this Lakers team already has razor thin margins when it comes to how this roster is constructed, and being without Boogie for even a month or two to start the season would be a huge loss.
Yeah, the reporting was kind of weird on it, that you would think something like that would come out immediately, but I don't know, it must have just kept bothering him more as the days went on and never really got fixed. But yeah, I mean, if the Warriors are down DeMarcus Cousins, I mean, I guess they have JaVale McGee, and maybe they can slide Anthony Davis up to center to, like, fix some of that. But, you know, it's obviously not great for them.
If the answer is they have JaVale McGee, I don't know if it's such a good thing.
I honestly don't – as long as it's not a
season ender. I think mm-hmm. their best lineup, honestly, to me, is Davis at center anyway, with right. DeMarcus not on the floor. So I don't necessarily think it would hurt them as long as Davis is okay playing a ton of center. He obviously doesn't like playing center, right. but I mean, just Davis at center, LeBron at point guard, and three shooters is their best yes. lineup to me. So I don't think it's a huge deal in terms of the Lakers season's mm-hmm. over or anything like that. But for fantasy, I wasn't going to be drafting DeMarcus Cousins probably anyways, just because I didn't think he was going to get more than 25 minutes a game, and now it's just even more risky than that.
Well, the issue, as you mentioned, is Davis wants to play power forward, and it sounds like LeBron wants to play point guard, which I think will probably end up happening. But right, the best case scenario might be an injury like this forcing Anthony Davis to play most of his minutes at center, because I don't really trust Frank Vogel to look Anthony Davis and more so LeBron James in the eye and say, no, this is where you're going to play. I don't think he has that kind of clout with them.
You don't say.
Yeah, I don't say. I told you yesterday, I was listening to a pod and they mentioned Frank Vogel. I completely forgot that he's the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, he's that's such a forgotten about aspect of this season, just because everyone's talking about the roster. But
right.
Yeah, that's not a good situation.
So Team USA, the big news out of that camp yesterday was they got just absolutely beat down by, I wouldn't even say a G League All-Star team, just a collection of G League players who happened to be in the LA area and were willing to scrimmage. I wouldn't freak out too much about that. It seems like every Olympics or FIBA cycle we hear a story like this, dating all the way back to like 1992, when I think the Chris Webber select team allegedly beat Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson and the 92 team. But there's a Team USA exhibition versus Spain tomorrow night in California. What is your level of interest in this? It will be televised. I'm assuming, James, you are not going to be watching this.
Well, I won't watch that just because of the time of day it is, but I'm going to try to watch as many of the morning games as I can in the tournament.
Right. I think they're going to be 8 or 9 a.m. Central time, so that actually lines up. I'd rather do that than, I feel like in years past it's been either middle of the afternoon or late at night.
Yeah, I mean, the late at night aspect, like especially on a weekend, I'm not gonna like go out of my way to watch an exhibition, right. but I mean the morning games, I mean that's mm-hmm. that's a perfect kind of remedy for this spot in the sports calendar.
All right, composite rankings, you can find these on the site. They're the header on the NBA page, should be pretty easy to navigate. The three of us, as I said, submitted our top 150. Shannon McEwen did the same, and pretty self-explanatory from there. You know, we took the average of the four. We also have a median measurement. And unsurprisingly, the results yielded a pretty clear top three. Harden ended up being number one. I had him number one. So did Shannon. Alex, you had him number two behind Giannis. James, you had him at three behind Giannis and Towns. And of course, two and three ended up being Giannis and Towns. And there's a little bit of a gap between those three and Anthony Davis at number four. How big was that gap for you guys, I guess? Did you consider anyone else really in the top three? Was it hard to separate Harden, Giannis, Towns from that next tier with Davis, Curry, Jokic, and Embiid?
I think for me, I think there's a pretty good chance, a realistic chance, that Steph Curry sneaks into the top three if he stays healthy. I mean, because this Warriors team is just like ridiculously thin. Like I've talked about with you, Nick, like, is Alec Burks their like fourth most talented offensive player, you know, especially before Klay Thompson comes back. So, it's also a reason I'm still high on, D'Angelo Russell, but I think if anybody sneaks into that top three, it's probably Steph Curry.
Yeah. I thought those top three, you know, obviously extremely talented, but I think they're just the three safest guys too. Right. Like I totally agree with. I mean, Curry could finish as the number one guy. I mean, Davis could finish as the number one guy. I mean, there's scenarios where that plays out. I mean, I think Jokic could finish as the top three guy, but I just think the top three guys, it's just, you know exactly what you're getting, and there's very little concern in terms of injuries.
Yeah, I think that top six, Harden, Giannis, Towns, Davis, Curry, Jokic, could be scrambled in just about any order. You know, as the rankings demonstrate, I think Jokic would probably be the most surprising number one overall, but you drop down to seven, and then it's Embiid, who is inherently limited by the number of games he's going to play. And then you drop down to Lillard at number eight, just a guy who doesn't quite provide the all-around statistics or the high-end offensive numbers that someone like Curry or Towns provides. And as you keep going further down, you know, LeBron at nine obviously has his question marks after last season. I wanted to talk about Bradley Beal at 10. I had him eight in my ranking. Shannon had him all the way up at six. He said he actually wanted to put him higher. And then you two had him at 13th and 14th, respectively. Is this partially because he just can't sustain what he did last year, essentially carrying that team for the last 65 games? Is it concern that he might be traded at some point, taking on a lesser role? I mean, the gap between 6 or 8 and 13 and 14 isn't huge, but you know, what are you expecting, a slight regression from him this year?
I mean, he played all 82 games last year and led the league in minutes. There's no reason for that to happen this year. Like, I mean, maybe they'll do it. I have no idea what the Wizards organization is up to. Like, I'm sure that Bradley Beal can play at a top five fantasy level. I just think it's the chances of, you know, the Wizards throwing him out there for that long, I don't really buy it this year.
Yeah, if you told me he was going to be on the Wizards all season and lead the league in minutes again, he would probably be my fifth guy. But I think there's a chance he gets traded to a situation where he's like the third guy. There's a chance he, if he gets hurt and misses. I mean, he hasn't been like the most durable guy ever. And then last year he leads the league in minutes. I think it was crazy for them to give him that many minutes. You know, they winning this year is not a priority for them. His teammates are horrible. So I just think there's more risk there than with the other guys that I'm considering in that like 5 to 10 range.
Yeah, he's played 82 each of the last 2 years, 77 the year before that. But as you mentioned, it really wasn't all that long ago that he was considered, you know, certainly not on the level of an Embiid or a Blake Griffin or anything like that, but, you know, a guy that you couldn't really trust. I mean, 63 games in 2014-15 and then just 55 the year after, and he didn't even start 20 of those games. So he's kind of turned it around from a health perspective. But I'm with you guys. I think last year was probably the absolute peak.
There's also a chance that there's a – you know, Anthony Davis situation where he asks for a trade and, like, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of weird downside aspects that aren't there with the other guys sort of in that range.
It does seem like he's going down that path, like giving Washington every opportunity, you know, to do right by him. I mean, he's yet to make any negative comments whatsoever. We already know, you know, over the last 2 or 3 years, there've been rumblings about his relationship with John Wall. Now Wall's just essentially out of the picture for a year and a half. But it would be surprising to me, one, if Bradley Beal takes that extension that I believe he has another, what, month or two, I think, to sign. And then, you know, two, if he doesn't end up requesting a trade at some point this year. The Wizards, I think we can all agree, are not going to be a very good team.
No, I think they're going to, start, what, CJ Miles at the three? You have, like, Bertans also in there, Troy Brown. I think their second best player is Thomas Bryant. Like, I'm pretty convinced that that's the case.
Yeah, I really don't know who else would be in the running. Ish Smith,
I think.
And do they, you know, when they're losing by 18 heading into the fourth quarter, like, how many minutes does Bradley Beal play in that?
Last year, the answer was like 42.
right. But, yeah, I mean, it's just, they have to look at him as a trade asset when he turns down that extension. And at that point, you preserve his minutes for whoever you're trading.
They're one of those teams I expect to play as if they're contending for the first 20 games and then, you know, hopefully come to their senses, although they've shown very few signs of kind of looking ahead with how they've operated, especially as it pertains to Beal. I want to talk about some of the outliers in the rankings, guys who, you know, maybe one or two of us were significantly higher or lower on than the others. The first one that jumps out to me is a guy who's getting tons of Team USA hype right now, Donovan Mitchell. After listening and reading about how he's played this week in Team USA, I think you might be in the right here, James. You have Mitchell all the way up at number 12 on your list. I had him at 28. Alex has him at 28. Shannon had him at 26. You know, what is the reasoning? I know you went into this a little bit on Twitter last night, but what is the reasoning for having him, you know, so much higher, basically a round and a half higher than the rest of us?
I think that last year he was playing in an incredibly flawed offense, not necessarily an offensive system, but just the pieces in that offense. Just, you know, there was no reason for him to ever have a one-on-one with a spread floor where he could just do a pick and roll with three shooters or just kind of beat his man, because you had Ricky Rubio, who was just nobody tried to guard. And I mean, even like Jay Crowder, they've made huge upgrades in those departments. So I think, you know, their best lineups, it's going to be Rudy Gobert and four guys that can really shoot. And I think that's just going to open up so many more opportunities for him. You can also just sort of factor in, you know, natural from age 22 to age 23 skills growth. I think a lot of the best players in kind of the modern era have taken a bit of a leap after their first Team USA experience. And he's just one of those offensive engines where I think, you know, he's not in quite like the James Harden type of realm, but I think he's kind of a step below that where he's just going to have a really high usage. He helps you in pretty much every category except for blocks. Like, I think the field goal percentage will be a plus this year because his efficiency should improve with the more spread out floor. So I just kind of like the idea of getting a guy like that where he's going to help you in seven of the eight categories. And I think there's just a really high ceiling for him. Like, one of the over-unders I kind of came up with him is just, would you go over-under 25.1 points per game for him this year? Ooh. He was at 23.8 last year. I think he gets close to maybe 26 points a game. And then I think the assists go up too, because I think people are going to have to leave a shooter to help on him, especially on those pick and rolls. So I think he's going to eclipse the five assist mark this year for the first time.
He's a guy too that got off to a really rough start last year. I mean, I think at the 35 game mark, basically at the end of December, he was shooting 29% from three, just over 40% from the field. And, you know, you look at the overall numbers and, you know, it kind of looks like he almost plateaued in from his rookie season. And part of that was just setting the bar so high as a rookie. But over the second half of last year, after the All-Star game, 45% from three, 46% from the field, 58% true shooting. Free throw rate was way up. His on-off was almost double. You know, and the supporting cast around him is only getting better. I agree with just about everything you said, James. I think, and we'll talk about this later on, I think if there's a prohibitive favorite to, you know, maybe not only win Most Improved Player Award, but really, really make that jump from, you know, borderline all-star, borderline, you know, if you were making a 15th team All-NBA type of guy to someone who's really going to leap into that second or third team All-NBA conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that overall. Just like, I think after hearing the Team USA stuff, also like Mitchell should probably be closer to where we have him like average ranked, like 23.5, like over under probably 20 and where you should draft him. My only concern with Mitchell is like, do they need him to take 20 shots a game anymore with Conley and Bogdanovich there and Joe Ingles is still there? Like, I think his field goal percentage could go up by so much that it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so like for me it's hard to balance the thought of him being so much more efficient with maybe seeing less usage. But I don't, like James said, like maybe the floor just gets spaced out so well that he just even sees more volume somehow. So I think he's a really hard guy to project overall.
I think the reason why I think the attempts stay the same and maybe like I think is the safest bet, but I also wouldn't rule out like them going up. Is just this, the only way for this team to be a legitimate championship contender is for him to sort of take that leap into just dominant closer, dominant like 26, 27 point a game guy. Whereas if they just make it a big thing where like everyone just gets a turn, we're sharing the ball a ton, I mean, they could win a ton of games in the regular season, but I don't really think that sets them up that well for the postseason.
And I think they'll do that to some degree, but you look at the guys they brought in, none of those players, you know, are going to be a superstar caliber, you know, player, especially in this context. Like, I don't think any of those guys...
They're just all great supporting players.
Right, and I think they know that. You know, I don't think Bogdanovich is coming in saying, all right, I'm the number one option now. Conley's never thought that way. You know, I think they recognize there's, you know, they probably wanted to come play with Donovan Mitchell. I don't think any of those guys are going to think they're going to come in and take over this team. I think they fully recognize the pecking order. And yeah, like you said, I would be very surprised if he's not a 45%+ shooter from the field. And that number could go up even quite a bit more. I mean, the last few years, a lot of the difficult looks that he's had to take for a team that just didn't have shot creators, you know, that just won't be the case anymore. Another guy who you're a little bit higher on, James, than the rest of us, you had Jimmy Butler, 9th overall in your rankings. Shannon and I both had him at 14. Alex, you were a little bit lower, down at 20. I guess I'll let you guys kind of battle it out for where you're at on Jimmy Butler.
I mean, for me, Butler, I kind of worry about the games played. That's kind of where, like, I kind of constructed my list from a risk-reward perspective. And, like, I don't really count on Jimmy Butler playing more than, like, 72 games. And at that point, it's just hard for me to like draft a guy who I just assume is going to, you know, like play 65 to 70 games. I think, I mean, his usage is definitely going to go up, But at the same time, like, I think, I mean, the Heat and Spoelstra, he's a coach who's going to let, he's going to want like a lot of ball movement and a lot of other guys. I think Jimmy Butler wants to come in and dominate. But at the same time, I don't think Spoelstra is a guy to like necessarily let that happen if he doesn't think it's best for the team. But overall, it's just the injury concerns for me, which is why I put him at like 20.
Yeah, that's valid. I maybe should have cooked in a little bit more games played risk there. You know, I think he's going to be just – there are just very few players in the NBA that I think are going to be more of a focal point for their team right. offensively than Butler. And so I just think he's going to have his hand in pretty much everything, whether it's scoring or assisting. And he's really – you know, at his best, he's a true eight-category guy. I mean, his blocks for position, I think, is above average what you'd expect there. So I think he's the type of guy where it's just a really nice foundational piece where he's helping you pretty much everywhere. I mean, I think he's just a perfect fit with the Heat sort of culture, and he's going to come in like in maybe the best shape he's been in a couple of years. And everything's just going to revolve around him. And I think he wants, like, he clearly wanted to be the guy. I think he wants to make a statement this year about just how good he can be with him being the clear best player on his team. And I didn't factor in enough games played risk there. So I think that that's a really good point. But if he does play like 75 games, I think he's going to have just a monster first round caliber fantasy season.
I mean, do you think he can top what was his best season, his final year in Chicago, 2016-17? I think that was a Dwayne Wade year. 23.9 points, 6.2 rebounds, 5.5 assists, just under 2 steals, half a block.
Well, think of the pace difference, right. like from like those Chicago teams in that era of the NBA versus like just any team in today's yeah. era. Like, there's just going to be, I mean, I think he could average like 26, 27 a game this yeah. year. So that's sort of where I'm going with that.
Yeah, they were at 95.3. possession for 48. So yeah, that is actually a very good point. Let's see who else. What do you think about Paul George versus Jimmy Butler? You know, we talked about the games played concerns with Butler. Obviously, George inherently carries that as well. They're right next to each other in our composite rankings, number 12 and 13. And James, this was of all the players in maybe the top 30 or so, probably the biggest outlier. I had Paul George at 11. Shannon has him at 11. Alex has him all the way up at 7, and then you're down at number 30 yeah. overall.
On our next update, I'm going to have him like 8 spots higher, like yeah. low 20s or high 20s, I should say.
Still, though, I mean, a big difference.
I just think you look at the incentives of the Clippers this year, the incentives of Paul George this year in the regular season. I just don't see any reason at all for him to play more games than he needs to. Like, I don't think they're going to. If anything, I would expect them to take sort of a cautious approach with him coming back from those shoulder surgeries. I think it's a situation where this team could just be really, really good to the point that he might play, you know, 28 minutes, 30 minutes, 31 minutes in like some of their wins where they mm-hmm. just don't need to lean on him that heavily at all. I know that, you know, the Thunder were, you know, a team that was over 500 last year, but like they needed every last bit that Paul George could give them to be as good as they were last year. Whereas this Clippers team, I just think they have so many different ways to beat you that I don't think they're going to have to lean on him that heavily. And especially just when factoring in the shoulder surgeries, like I don't like drafting players that I already know have a physical issue, especially mm-hmm. in the first round. Like that's burned me before. And I'm not concerned about the type of player that he's going to be in like January, February, March, but just for a first round pick, it's not where I'm going to be going.
Devin Booker came in at 16 overall. I had him at 16. Shannon had him at 15. James had him up at 13. You were a little bit lower on him, Alex, at 24. What is a concern with Booker?
Booker, I mean, I don't know. The games played thing is. It concerns me a little bit, not too much. I just don't know if he – they brought Ricky Rubio in to presumably, like, handle the ball a lot more. I mean, you don't bring Ricky Rubio in to, like, be second fiddle offensively, I guess, unless you're the Jazz. But I just feel like his assists will probably go down, Booker's. And, I mean, he has a chance to be more effective offensively. But at the same time, I just feel like there are other guys who I would rather – take the risk on, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like really confident about other guys like De'Aaron Fox, you know, Jimmy Butler having just as big of a role offensively as Devin Booker. I mean, I think, he obviously has like all-star upside and puts up plenty of numbers. I don't know. I think it's more of a reflection of how highly I view other players mm-hmm. that ended up just dropping him down my list than me, like, not particularly liking Devin Booker.
I think you're right. The assists, he's not going to average 7 assists a game with Ricky Rubio on that team. He's really not going to be playing point guard for most of his minutes, as he has been kind of on and off these last couple of years. He is a guy, though, that I think has room to improve as a shooter. Like, I think if you ask the casual fan to name, you know, the top 5 or 10 shooters in the league, everyone would say Devin Booker, but he kind of has that Kyle Kuzma, you know, effect to it. Like, you look at the numbers, like, Kuz barely topped 30% from three last year. Devin Booker on 6.5 attempts per game was under 33%, and, you know, after shooting 38% the year prior. So I think that goes back up. But at the same time, you know, I think the assists go back down, and the lack of assists is probably a little more harmful than maybe a half more 3-pointer per game is helpful.
Yeah.
I think that the assists probably go down, but I also think that Devin Booker might just take the ball up the court and just kind of tell Ricky Rubio to, like, get moving. Like, I just,
that's going to be a terrible fit.
It's just going to be weird to watch him be like, okay, here you go, Ricky. Like, you're the point guard. I'll go, like, wait my turnover in the corner. Like, I still think he's going to just handle the ball a decent amount.
I can't imagine there's a lot of mutual respect between those two.
No. I mean, it was a terrible signing, and that obviously not ideal for – like, it would have been much better for Devin Booker's fantasy value if they had signed Terry Rozier or something like that. But I'm not going to – I still think he could average, like, 5.5, 6 assists even with Rubio there. So I think that there's a chance he gets close to 30 points a game this year. So, I mean – my biggest concern with him is just the always late season games played concern. Yep. But, you know, with the new lottery odds, I don't think that's as big of an issue.
So we should probably talk about Russell Westbrook. He came in at 20 overall. Shannon and I were aligned on him at 27. You guys were quite a bit higher. Alex, you had him 11th. James, you had him 15th. I want to put Russell Westbrook higher. I think of the three of us,
I wanted to put him lower.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to – I wanted to just ask you, like, why did you rank him this high? What happened?
Well, it's, you know, it's fantasy rankings. Right. I mean, it's not, you know, I think that system, I could see him having his, like, a significantly better fantasy year than he did last year. And I think that the free throw percentage thing, I just don't buy that he's all of a sudden this horrible free throw shooter. Like, he's a horrible regular shooter, but I mean, he's a guy that's shot 80% from the line.
80 plus percent 7 years in a row, and then 66 last year.
I don't see that. I think he bounces back up, and then, you know, I even think his field goal percentage, like, almost has to go up just moving into this different offense. And I mean, he's going to take a bunch of Clint Capella's rebounds. I think he probably gets close to a triple double again. I mean, I hope
Clint Capella puts up a fight.
I don't really have any fantasy concerns for him. Yeah. I think he's going to have a good fantasy season.
Well, what do you think about the assists? He's led the league in assists each of the last 2 years. He's averaged at least 10.3 each of the last 4 years. You know, kind of going through and tweaking our projections, that's something I've really gone back and forth on. You know, he's obviously teaming up with another high volume assist guy. Would you go over under double digit assists?
I think the safe money's on it being like in the 9 to 10 range, like 9.5, something like that. But I think he will want to average a triple double again. bold statement, but
first player to ever do it for two teams.
It's just, I mean, he's been over 10 for 4 straight years. Even if he drops down to, I can't see it going below 9. So I mean, you're still talking about a top 10-12 guy in that category.
Yeah, I mean, Harden's 2016-17 season where he averaged 11 assists a game, that's like a complete outlier in his career.
Yeah,
like last year he averaged 7.5 assists. I think more people thought he averaged more assists than that. And I think if anything, like, Westbrook's probably not gonna be the one to be spotting up and shooting. You rather have,
I don't know, did you not see that video of him shooting wide open threes at UCLA the other day?
Right. But I mean, there's a chance Harden ends up shooting more threes, like, as a spot up guy. But as far as Westbrook, like, this is another situation where the free throw percentage is a really good thing to bring up. But I'm just, like, looking at the guys below him on my list. It's like, well, Kemba Walker, his situation's kind of cloudy now. Bradley Beal, we talked about him. Kawhi's got the injury history. Kyrie Irving's got an injury history. Drew Holiday's on a weird rebuilding team. Like, mm-hmm. do I think Doncic or Trae Young is going to be better than Westbrook? Like, it's just hard for me to justify putting a bunch of guys over Westbrook.
I also think with the assists, like, he'll have more true assists this year. Like, a lot of his assists in Oklahoma City were him just trying to get assists, whereas, like, in the flow of this Rockets offense, there's going to be better shooters to pass to, and there's going to be an even better lob man in Capella. So I think, like, he'll be able to get his assists in a more authentic way this year.
Two guys you were a little bit lower on, Alex. Kristaps Porzingis, who, of course, didn't play at all last year. He's now in Dallas. And then John Collins. The rest of us had Collins either at 21 or 22 overall. You had Collins back at 38. Another guy who's missed some games the last couple of years. I assume that was somewhat of a factor.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even really mean to have Collins this low. I was kind of surprised it ended up this way. Because he's a guy I actually really like Collins as a player. Like, he was basically 20 and 10 last year. When he was healthy, he's got upside as a 3-point shooter. The like lack of blocks last year kind of concerned me, that they're just really going to want to keep him at power forward. You know, it sounds like Alex Len's going to be like the full-time center. So I don't know what that does for Collins rebounding. But I'll probably end up moving him up when everything's said and done, especially once we get, you know, our projections on the site and I can kind of see where he ends up landing. But yeah, the missed games are a little bit of a concern. But yeah, I mean, I should probably have him higher.
That's how I feel about De'Aaron Fox, who is 28th overall. I have him 39th. Shannon has him 42nd. And then both of you guys have him quite a bit higher. Alex, 22nd. And James, 17th overall. I mean, I'm expecting a big leap. I guess where is it coming statistically for him to make, you know, a leap of, you know, 40 spots or so in the overall rankings?
Fox?
Just more points, more assists, better efficiency, probably more threes. I mean,
definitely more threes. Less than three attempts a game last year.
I think he's probably going to improve across the board. Maybe he stays the same in like steals and blocks, but I mean, I just love getting the kind of offensive engine types like as sort of my first guard off the board. I tend to skew my rankings towards big men just because I think that it's tougher to get blocks and rebounds later in the draft without getting a guy that's just going to destroy your free throw percentages. Right. But, you know, with Fox, I like the floor, and I think that there's upside there. Maybe I'm a little too high on him. Maybe he shouldn't be in the top 20, but I definitely think he should be in the top 30.
I don't know. I'm really high on Fox. I think, I mean, the transition from year one to year two from him was like crazy. He played like four more minutes a game, but his free throw attempts went up a ton. He averaged basically the same amount of turnovers, but brought his assists up from 4 to 7, which is absurd. Yeah, if he can expand his range a little bit, stay hitting like 35% of his threes, if the free throw percentage goes up at all and he keeps shooting them, like, I mean, he's an opportunity. Like, there's... he could have just as good of a fantasy season as Trae Young, who I think a lot of people are going to, like, he might go at the end of first round in some drafts or beginning of second round for some people who are just insanely high on him. But, yeah, Fox, especially the Team USA factor, I think he's due for he could be most improved player. That wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, I haven't seen odds on that, but I mean, if somebody handed those out, I would say him and Mitchell, Tatum, you know, are probably in that top three. I'm sure there are a couple others if we really comb through. But you mentioned free throw rate up almost 14 percentage points from rookie year to sophomore year. And, you know, he's not going to make another leap that great from year two to year three. But, you know, even a 4 or 5 percentage point increase is pretty significant in the long run. What about Chris Paul? I have my concerns. I think I expected to be a little bit lower on him than I ended up being. I was the highest. I had him at 30. You guys both had him back in the 50s. Is this again kind of hedging for games played? I do think if he's able to stay healthy, which is a massive if, and there's maybe a 10% chance that happens, that, you know, he could end up being one of the leaders in the league in assists, you know, getting away from James Harden. And, you know, he still put up really good assist numbers when healthy in Houston. Doesn't have the greatest cast around him, not a lot of shooters, but he does have a decent pick and roll center in Steven Adams. He does have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Outside of that, though, not a ton of talent. Gallinari, you know, another guy who's probably can be penciled in for 35 missed games. If Chris Paul stays healthy, I think he'll be really good. But again, a very big if.
Yeah, I mean, if Paul stays healthy and stays on the Thunder the whole year, I mean, him being like the 20th to 30th best fantasy player, like that wouldn't surprise me at all. He has the his assists are going to go up big time. Like he could average 18 and 10. But for me, it's just a risk reward thing. Like I just if 30 is like sort of his realistic ceiling, if he plays like 70 games, I don't want to draft him there. I want to draft him at like 50 ish. Where I am hedging for him missing games, going to another team, sitting out every time he has a sore knee or sore ankle because the Thunder don't want to wreck the trade asset, all of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. I thought he was a really tough guy to rank. So, you know, anything in the 30 to 60 range would have made sense to me. It's yep. just, very, like Alex said, it's a lot of risk, a lot of uncertainty, and there's a lot of good players. So I probably just would never take him in the third round.
The guy right behind Chris Paul in our rankings comes in at number 42, Zion Williamson. Three of us had him ranked in the 40s. James, you were the highest at 34, but I know you've done a couple early season drafts, Alex, and Zion's gone even higher than that.
He never gets past the third round. I've never seen him get – so, I mean, he usually late second to early third is where I kind of expect him to end up, like come draft day. But I've done at least five – mock drafts in various formats, he has never gone after the third round.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's obviously not going to help you in threes. I think he's going to be a slight negative in free throw percentage, but I don't think he's going to be a huge negative there. I think he's going to be like a 68-70% free throw guy. And then I think he's going to just help you pretty much everywhere else. I mean, maybe he's under four assists, but I think eventually he's like a five assist guy. And then you know, I think the blocks and steals, I think he could be 1.5 in both of, I mean, mm-hmm. obviously blocks, he's going to be over 1.5, but I think in steals, he could be 1.5 as a rookie. And there just aren't many guys that are going to get you over a block and over a steal. And I think his free throw, his field goal percentage could be around like 57. Like, I mean, he's just going to,
I mean, it was at 68 at Duke.
Yeah. I mean, right. I think he's just going to really like lift you in a few categories yep. that you don't expect most rookies to lift you in. And then I think just, I mean, the points are going to be there. I mean, he's a very unique fantasy player. He's a tough guy to rank. But I think the one thing that could really swing his value is just what's the free throw percentage? Because if he's like in the high 50s, then all of a sudden that's a horrible pick. But if he's not really hurting you a ton there, then I think he's a fine pick in like the late third, early fourth.
I think he's going to be a major drag on threes. I think they're, you know, we only saw him for like 9 minutes in summer league, but like that was a disastrous 9 minutes for his 3-point.
He's not, I mean, looks. What would you say over under for Zion made threes this year?
Less than one a game.
Yeah, well, obviously. Sure. But I mean, total? Like 15?
I think he'll have more than that. I think he'll have games where he goes like 1 of 7. Like, I think he'll be undisciplined.
He'll take.
I think early on he will, okay. And then eventually he'll just drop off. I think he's like, did you watch Summer League? Like, he was
off
the dribble,
league.
Step like, back, sidestep threes.
This is a team that has a chance to get into the playoffs.
He is very coachable. I will say that. Threes, I think early on there will be some experimenting with the threes. It will not look good, and he'll kind of get away from it. But, you know, I think it'll kind of look like Marvin Bagley last year, you know, where the games where Bagley would play 25 to 30 minutes, he'd start feeling himself a little bit and maybe take one or two more threes than he should. But sometimes he'd have games where he'd go 3 of 5.
I'm thinking it might be kind of like first half of the season Giannis sort of, where it's just some games he maybe takes an open one.
Yeah, exactly.
But like he's not ever really looking for that shot.
I think pretty early on it will be clear that he's not ready to start taking like off the dribble threes, and then it'll be, you know, trailing in transition, that type of thing.
Sure, but I mean, I don't think you can ding a. When you're taking him for the big man stats, right?
Like, I think the defensive stats are the biggest thing.
Like the blocks, the rebounds, the steals, the field goal percentage. Like, that's what you're taking him for. So, like, there's a lot of guys that you take for those stats, and you assume you're not going to get any threes from them.
Where would you set the over under? I'll just give you a number, actually. Over under 16 points per game.
I'll take over.
I think I would go slightly over, but not by much. I don't think he gets to 20.
I think like 18.5 is probably where I would. Just set what I would expect, and then I think it could go over, could go under on that.
Yeah, I think that's a good line, because I'm someone who thinks they'll use him, or he's pretty much a big man in his first year. Like, I think long term, like he's a forward, like he's a slasher. Like, I think I just don't know in his first year how much ball handling he's actually going to do, how many jump shots he's actually going to take. Like, he's kind of a pick and roll, like maybe pick and pop guy. You could face him up from like the elbow. Mm-hmm. But I just, I kind of have a lot of doubts on how much they're going to use him outside of like a big man context. And I think it's just tough for someone to get over like 16 points a game. Like DeAndre Ayton had a great rookie year, but he only averaged 16 a game on like 59% shooting. Like if Williamson did that, I think that's, that would be expected.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Pretty big gap, not surprisingly, between Zion Williamson and Ja Morant and RJ Barrett. Were you guys surprised how close these two ended up being? Four spots apart. Morant ended up at 91, Barrett ended up at 94.
I mean, I'm not surprised because I think Barrett the summer league wasn't great for Barrett, like efficiency wise. Volume wise, it was good, but the Knicks have so many other alternative options. If Barrett's having like a bad game, or he just gets off to a bad start as a rookie, like they have Elfrid Payton and Dennis Smith Jr. Randall's going to just shoot a ton. Knox still exists. Like, you know, I think they'll. It's going to be a lot harder for the Grizzlies to like not use Ja Morant constantly than it is going to be for the Knicks to not use RJ Barrett constantly.
I mean, I think they're both going to be pretty terrible.
Say you have Morant as the second best point guard on the Grizzlies.
I mean, I think Tyus Jones is just a better player than him this year. And I think that Tyus Jones is probably their second best guard, period, this year. So I think that there's going to be plenty of minutes for him to have, even when Ja's playing. And then, I mean, this is for 8-cat. So, like, for points leagues, it's going to be different. Like, I could see drafting one of these guys if I'm not worried about my percentages, but I think Ja Morant's going to shoot below 40% from the field this year. I think RJ Barrett's just going to be a disaster at times. I don't really want anyone on that Knicks team other than Mitchell Robinson, just because I have no idea on a night-to-night basis what I'm getting from a minutes perspective. So with Ja, like, there's, you know, you're taking him just hoping that you can get 8 assists or 7.5 assists, right, and that he just doesn't destroy your field goal percentage. But I mean, that's just not that appealing of a player for me. And I think, you know, he's kind of a slight guy. I don't know how Ja's going to hold up under his first 82-game season. I wouldn't be surprised if he misses, like, 15, 20 games. So there's just – I'm not interested in either of these guys, really.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to lead to injury necessarily. I mean, it certainly could. But I think his, like, two-point percentage is going to be really rough. I think it's going to drag down his overall field goal percentage. Like, he's going to have
– he's going to get a lot of shots blocked that he hasn't gotten blocked.
Well, I think it's going to be the same thing that we found out very early on with Lonzo Ball, where, you know, he's getting to the hole and just not finishing at nearly the rate that he was at the college level because he can't absorb the contact. He's trying to get around defenders instead of finishing through. And that's something with Morant. Like, we haven't really – you know, a lot of these guys, like Julius Randle's put on 15 pounds, you know, somebody you just mentioned, and Barrett's already kind of has an NBA body. Like, Ja Morant weighs, like, what, 170 pounds? He is basically the Brandon Jennings body.
I ranked Brandon Clark ahead of Ja Morant just for this year, just because I think I know exactly what I'm getting out of Brandon Clark, and I think it's what he gives you is maybe tougher to find later in the draft, and I don't think he kills you anywhere. So after Zion, I could see not taking a single rookie in any of my drafts, but
Those Barrett and Morant are points league guys.
Yeah.
Like, for sure. Like,
well, I think Barrett's counting stats are going to be great, but I think the efficiency might even be worse than Morant.
Yeah, well, I mean, what counting stats does he give you besides points and rebounds?
I think he'll give 4.5 assists, maybe more. I mean, he's gonna pound the hell out of the ball.
I don't think he's going to give you much in the defensive categories. Yeah. I don't think he's going to give you many three-pointers, so I think it's like points and rebounds. I think he'll be above average for a rookie, like a top five pick rookie even. But I just don't trust David Fizdale to be like, all right, we're giving it's RJ Barrett's like spot, and this is like I don't see how Mitchell Robinson plays less than 25 minutes a game, but
Mitchell Robinson should be playing 32 minutes a game.
Yeah, I mean, like, who even plays more out of Dennis Smith and Elfrid Payton? Like, I don't know.
And the thing with Barrett is he's going to be surrounded by a horrific supporting cast when you're talking about getting assists. Other than lobbing to Mitchell Robinson, are you kicking out to Kevin Knox for corner threes? Are you kicking to Julius Randle for elbow jumpers? You know, if he's playing with Dennis Smith, is there a worse player to pair with RJ Barrett than Dennis Smith?
No.
Yeah, I mean, this team is going to be a disaster. We were talking about this yesterday in the context of their front court. And, you know, who, like, let's say you want Randle or you want Robinson,
you know, how do you possibly handcuff that in the event of an injury or something like that? I mean, there are literally five or six guys who could end up playing major minutes, or at least in the past have been guys who've commanded 20 plus minutes for other teams.
And they don't have, it's not like they like committed, like, here's a 3-year deal, Julius Randle, we are committed to going forward with you. Like, they don't,
it's all 2 years.
Like, they don't really mind if okay, I guess we don't really like you tonight, like, we're gonna play this guy, like,
which is exactly what they did last year. Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, what was their over under 29.5? Yeah, I mean, think comical. Comical.
Comically high.
All right. Any other guys you want to hit on who stuck out really at any point in the rankings? Could be rookies. Could be you know, Kevin Love, I think, was someone I had written down who I think you were quite a bit lower on him, Alex.
I had him, I think, 72nd or something. But that's only because I, in the drafts that I've done, I've gotten him in like two separate drafts. One was at like 70 and one was at like 85. Like, he just – people – won't take Kevin Love earlier than 60 because they're so scared of his injury history. And so I think for me, that's just like, yeah, he could, Kevin Love could have a top 40, top 30 season, but you can draft him at 75 and all he has to do is play 60 games and he gets value for you.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that he's the type of guy where he could win leagues this year if he just stays healthy and, like, basically just stays healthy. Like, yeah, it doesn't really matter if he gets traded. He's still going to be super productive. And that's interesting that you can get him that late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, I mean, he was going, like, 30 spots higher last year. So that's – yeah, I mean, what he provides is really tough to get in that range. So
right.
One guy that I was a lot higher on than everyone else is Jason Tatum. And
yeah,
I think that – I just really am kind of throwing out his entire last season. And in terms of like projecting going forward, I think that he's going to be around 20, 21 points a game this year, which is a massive jump from last year, obviously. But I think that he was just, his approach last year was just so off. Like, he was trying to get into the mid range way too much. And if he is more focused on taking threes and getting to the free throw line, and, you know, I think that there's room for improvement in the defensive categories. I think that he's one of those rare guys where, like, if you look at all eight categories, he could be a positive contributor relative to his position. And I love loading up my team with those type of guys early. So maybe I was too high on him at, like, 30, but I feel like at worst he should have been in, like, the mid-40s or low 40s.
Right. No, I don't think you're too high on him at all. I actually, looking at this now, I feel like he – should probably be higher.
Yeah,
I agree with you that, like, he, his chances of one of the, we have like props coming later, but I talk about doing like Jason Tatum all-star in the East, like, very possible.
Yeah.
And they lost Al Horford, who was like a big, like, ball handling passing guy for them. And if, you know, kind of depends on what happens with Enes Kanter, but Tatum could end up, you know, taking a lot of Horford's usage. Right. Kemba's not a huge assist guy. So yeah, I think James, your ranking is closer to where he should be drafted than where everyone else has him.
Yeah, that was one of my bigger regrets as well. I mean, we talked about De'Aaron Fox jumping up, you know, so much in terms of free throws. Not many guys, you know, who have Tatum's profile, you know, have their free throw rate decline from year one to year two. I think that's going to leap back up. I mean, he was under 3 free throw attempts per game, which for a guy who can get to the rim and finish like him is absurdly low. And if, you know, if he jumps up closer to 34, 35 minutes a game, he was at 31 last year. You could be looking at, you know, close to a block a game, closer to a steal and a half a game.
I'm kind of annoyed, like, selfishly, that the Team USA thing is sort of happening, because I feel like Donovan Mitchell and Jason Tatum would have just been amazing values coming off of, like, the years they had where you're making that, like, leap from year two to year three. But all this Team USA stuff, everyone's like, oh, man. Like, oh,
right. It might be overreactionary at this point. Did you have any other breakout guys to discuss? Somebody I wanted to talk about was Bam Adebayo.
Yeah.
I mean, not a surprise to anyone. I mean, when you clear out your, you know, nuisance starting center and basically hand the job to somebody, it's, you know, it's kind of an inherent step up. But I mean, I think he's going to be really, really, really good this year.
I got into discussion on Twitter beat about down. whether or not you should take Clint Capella over Bam Adebayo. I think you should, because I think Adebayo's ceiling is probably Clint Capella's floor. Now, that's assuming Westbrook doesn't steal like 3 of Capella's rebounds per game, which is like very possible.
But there could be like a 25 percentage point gap in their free throw percentage, though.
Yeah,
that is true. I think it's close, but yeah, I mean, Adebayo, I mean, I worry he's just like a low usage player, like kind of forever, and that like his rebounding is always going to be good. He's always going to be high efficiency, but he's never going to average more than like 12 points a game. Whereas Capella could get you like 16 to 18 on any given night.
I think he's going to be like Joakim Noah without the assists. Like, I think he's going to be like 1.5. Well, like his per 36, like he's at 1.5 steals. Like,
right.
I mean,
he was like over 2 assists last year, basically playing part-time starter.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's in a full-time role with Whiteside out of the picture. I think he gets to 2 blocks, and I think he's at like 1.2, 1.3 steals. And mm-hmm. then just, I think getting the double-digit rebounds is easy. He's not going to score a ton of points. Like, that's kind of the drawback. Right. Like, maybe he's 12, 13, 14 points a game, something like that. But I just, getting a center that is not going to hurt my free throw percentage and is going to help me right. in all the places I'm trying to get production from a center, like, that's mm-hmm. just so appealing to me that I hate guys like Drummond and Capella just because it's so annoying to kind of mm-hmm. build around that free throw percentage. But I mean, I recognize how valuable the other stuff they bring is, but like Adebayo, I think you can get that stuff to a certain degree without taking that hit.
And that makes sense. That's why we all have Towns so high.
Yeah.
And like exactly. why he's such a great fantasy player is because like Towns is going to shoot like 85-90% from yep. the free throw line. You don't even have to, it's like, you're not even taking a center.
It's he's kind of a cheat code yep. because there's no other center that does the stuff he does without taking anything off the table.
Do you want to take a few moments to talk about Thomas Bryant?
Thomas Bryant, the second best player on the Wizards.
By far.
And I don't think it's close.
Let's see what Isaiah has to say about that.
He, like, there's a lot of, his late season numbers are absurd. Like, yeah. his field goal percentage of scoring. Like, I know there's a lot of noise in, like, the fantasy rankings in, like, the last 25 games of the season. But their backup center options are Mo Wagner and Jan Mahinmi. There's, in my opinion, no reason for Thomas Bryant not to play 35 minutes a game. I think he can handle it, and he's a guy who his percentages are good. He can shoot threes, good rebounder. Like
another savvy Lakers move, just giving him away.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think it took me a while to come around on him because he was so bad for the Lakers, was so bad at that second year at Indiana when he stayed in school. It did seem like a little too good to be true, but I mean, as you said, especially that last 15 game run, he was basically a 14-10 guy.
Yeah, I think the hard part about Thomas Bryant is going to be if you're in a fantasy league with a bunch of like other like people who play a lot of fantasy basketball, like you're not going to get any value on Thomas Bryant. But if you're in a fantasy league with like casual players, you could probably steal him at like pick 100, oh. and it'll just be ridiculous.
Right. Are you guys interested in Rui at all? I was pleasantly surprised with how good he looked in summer league. I think he would be worth like a late round flyer.
I think he's a points
leagues.
League guy. Like I don't see where he contributes besides like field goal percentage, free throw yeah. percentage, points, rebounds. Like he's not right. a blocks guy. He's not a steals guy. He's gonna shoot maybe 83s this year. Like
I didn't consider him until I looked at the Wizards depth chart again.
Right. That's the thing. Like that's the appeal with him is they have to play him. You would think close to 30 minutes.
Isaac Bonga is their third listed small forward right now. Like he could play 35 minutes. Like right. he could actually play 35 minutes a game, even if he's not that good. Anybody playing 35 minutes a game should be on a fantasy roster.
He could
do
like
league.
17-7.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, look at the power forward depth chart too. It's, you know, we have Rui at one. I mean, maybe they bring him off the bench behind Bertans, but you know, they're such different players that
if Zion didn't exist, like, and this was the mid 2000s, I think Rui could win Rookie of the Year.
Oh, absolutely.
People just be like, whoa, 17.5 points, 7 rebounds. Like,
right.
Wow.
Well, and behind Bertans, it's Wagner and Bryant who, you know, are going to play center, and then Admiral Schofield who, you know, might spend half the year in the G League. So they really have no other choices. I don't see them bringing in anyone else, unless it's Carmelo Anthony. I don't know, you know, who else is even out there that would make sense for them. Are there any guys who, you know, who have been maybe top 100 players or even higher over the last few years who you think are just kind of, you know, this is a year they finally move into a, you know, the later phase, I guess, of their career?
I was a lot lower than all you guys on DeMar DeRozan mm-hmm. because I think he is not a part of their best lineup, and I think they are not really committed to him after this year. So I just I mean, he was always sort of a overrated, like, 8-category fantasy guy in the first place, just because he doesn't help you in a lot of the areas you're looking for help from a shooting guard at. But maybe I was too low. I think I probably was too low. I'm probably going to bump him up a little bit. But, like, I'm still about Aldridge. Like, I think he's going to be a really solid guy again this year. But I think DeRozan, like, he might not even be in their closing lineups against a lot of teams. So
you think he gets bumped by Murray and Derek White?
I think both those guys are in their best lineup. I think you probably want Rudy Gay just for defensive purposes. And, like, yeah. I don't know.
I think DeRozan not being a part of anyone's best lineup hasn't stopped him from playing 30 minutes
that's
a game
true.
Before.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
But yeah, I mean, he's, you're right in that, like, the Spurs don't have, they don't seem that committed to him being part of their future. He doesn't seem necessarily committed to playing for San Antonio.
Yep.
He's just a guy who, like, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists is just valuable in fantasy. Yeah.
Well, I think one of the more underrated parts of his season last year, I mean, he was still at 21 points per game, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. One, I think the assists go down with the return of Murray. You know, I don't think he's handling it quite as much in the half court. But he also relapsed as a three-point shooter.
Yeah, that was
287 attempts 2 seasons ago at 31%, which for DeMar DeRozan is pretty fantastic. Last year, 7 of 45, that's 16%. I can't imagine he's just going to jump back up to taking, you know,
well, no,
6
times.
No,
I think that's like a, like, the Spurs only want you taking shots you're good at. Like,
right.
they don't take threes just to take them. Like,
yeah.
So
that's what I'm saying. I think the threes are, you can just write that off. Like, that's not coming back, at least not this year.
I saw a video of DeRozan hitting threes, and, like, Spurs fans were excited. It's like, he's hitting threes. It's like, it's Popovich who made him stop doing this.
Yes.
Like, why? It's not, this isn't probably coming back. But yeah, I think he might be one of those guys you can just get discounted because people,
I think you guys are way too low on Fred VanVleet. I think
I don't like him.
I think his
personal.
I will give you that. I'm sure you had all the Raptors very low. But, like, I think VanVleet, like, if you look at just the contributions he's going to provide as, like, a 32, 33 minute a night guy, he's going to help you in field goal percentage. He's going to help you in free throw percentage. He's going to help you in assists. He's going to score, like, 15 points a game. He's going to make 2 threes a game. He's going to, like, get, like, a steal a game. I mean, I just think he's one of those guys that sneakily just helps you everywhere, like, kind of like a Joe Ingles type of guy where it's like all of a sudden he's really good at fantasy and people are going to be really surprised.
If he takes 6 threes a game, which minutes-wise, projections-wise, is very possible, you know, then I think that helps. I mean, field goal percentage, he's kind of hovered around 41 to 42, so I wouldn't expect, like, a huge help there. I'm already much lower on the Raptors overall. I don't think this team is going to be very good. And I don't really trust these guys who have been really, really good in specified smaller roles to all of a sudden, you know, they basically need, like, 3 guys to collectively take a leap from 7th or 8th man to, you know, 3rd or 4th option. And I just don't see that happening.
My worry about VanVleet, like, I think he'll play a lot of minutes because I don't think they want to do, like, Norman Powell and Stanley Johnson at the 2, is that he's just not really a scorer. Like, his per 36 free throw attempts are 2.4 for his career. Like, I just don't know if that changes. Like, I'm sure he can hit a lot of threes. His assists are always good. He has steal upside. But I also feel like Siakam and Lowry are just going to handle the ball a ton. Like, I'm expecting kind of a bounce back year for Lowry almost, assuming he you know, plays 70 games. But I think VanVleet's going to have, like, a really big, like, his ADP, like, top end to, like, bottom end is going to be, like, a pretty large, he's going to get drafted in a lot of different places.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's run through some betting stuff. Updated title odds via the FanDuel Sportsbook. Clippers are still the favorite at plus 330. Lakers plus 440. Milwaukee plus 550. Philly plus 850. Houston 950. Utah 1200. Golden State 1400. And Denver all the way down at 1900. We've discussed these kind of on and off since they came out after free agency, but based on this, I like Philly at plus 850.
Right.
I don't think Denver's a title team, but at plus 1900, I don't really hate that bet.
Denver at plus 1900, like, shocks me. I think they have the deepest team in the league. They have a MVP caliber player. They could have easily been in the conference finals last year. If Gary Harris can stay healthy and Michael Porter Jr. becomes, like, a rotation player, the ceiling for this team is like very, like, obviously they have a lot of teams to go through in the West, but 19-1 odds seems like way too big.
They should be flipped with Utah, I think.
See, I like Utah more. I don't necessarily like them more at 12-1 versus Denver at 19-1, but I think it's more likely that Utah wins the championship. I think Denver just matches up horribly with the teams most likely to come out of the East. So, like, sure, it's going to be tough for them to come out of the West in the first place. And then once they get there, mm-hmm, I can't picture them beating the Sixers or the Bucks.
Is there still value in Warriors 1400?
I mean, they have the top end talent and the experience. I mean, if they can get someone, you know, in the like free agent market towards the end, the buyout market, then they have good odds. But like that depth is like it took me another second to like look at their roster and be like, this is
I might absurd. If there was a bet, I'm sure there is a bet out there that you can find, but I would bet the Warriors to miss the playoffs if the odds were good enough, because I think there's a scenario where they just pack it in before Klay even comes back. If they're 5 games under 500 and it's like Klay's starting to ramp up activity, mm-hmm, like what's even the point?
I think that would probably require a Steph injury, which history has taught us is coming at some point. I mean, if Steph misses 10 games, you and I,
they'll
James
be
have talked about this. Like, what? Yeah, what's going to happen? Like,
any game Steph doesn't play, right, before Klay comes back, they will be just so, yeah, bad.
I mean, you talked about Alec Burks. Like, if Steph misses 15 games, Alec Burks is the number two scorer on that team for a month.
Warriors to not make the playoffs is plus 270. So it's not, yeah, it's not great,
no,
value.
I mean, it's not as good as you would like it to be.
Right.
Odds to finish with the number one seed, Milwaukee, the heavy favorite in the East, minus 130, Philly plus 160, and then it jumps all the way up to Boston at plus 1200. I mean, I wouldn't bet against Milwaukee or Philly. I'd be really, really surprised if anyone else is in that discussion.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Philly, they have enough incentive to just like rest Embiid, yeah, and, yeah, Horford that I think taking their under would probably make sense, but you could take their under and then take them to win the title, and I think that's completely, that makes a ton of sense.
The Bucks are just such a perfect regular season team that it's really tough to bet against them for that.
Yeah. Out West, Clippers plus 260, Denver plus 390, Utah 440, Houston 550, Lakers 550, and then Portland at plus 1600. I don't think the Clippers should be the favorite for the one seed.
I think
like Philly, I think they should be the favorite for the title, but not the one seed.
I think it's between the Jazz and the Nuggets for me.
Yeah.
And I think I actually really like the Jazz at 440 because I think they have the, like, both those teams have a distinct home court advantage because of the altitude factor and just the flight factor of other teams flying in. And then I think I don't think people understand how big the upgrade offensively is that the Jazz made. This
Rubio to Conley is going to be massive.
How would you downgrade the Lakers now that we know DeMarcus Cousins has suffered a torn ACL?
For real?
Yeah. Adam Wolf, courtesy of him, just sent it to me from Shams.
No name.
Yeah. Lakers starting DeMarcus Cousins suffered a torn ACL.
I need confirmation from the Lakers reporters.
Yes.
Man.
Yeah, this sucks a lot.
I mean, to be totally honest, I mean, it probably doesn't change things that much. I mean, like James said, I mean, anything that they got from Boogie was probably like a bonus.
The thing that really sucks for them is they just have no way of making the team better,
yep,
in the first place, like even without that. So they kind of needed all the guys they had on board to be pretty healthy and productive come the playoffs. And, you know, does this bump AD into that top three that we were talking about, or does it not really change anything with AD?
He's shown he can be uber productive alongside Cousins already. I mean, granted, LeBron's not a part of that equation in New Orleans, but yeah, I mean, slight bump, I guess. I mean, this is just brutal. I mean, what is this like? For does Cousins' career just basically, I mean, not done, but is he ever more than a 45 games a year the rest of the way? Torn Achilles, torn quad, torn ACL in a matter of what, a year and a half?
Feel really bad for him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a long way back from all that.
I'm not really sure what to say of what it means for the Lakers. I mean, it's certainly not a positive, but yeah, like you said, I think the biggest blow is you just you know, even if you didn't think Cousins was going to be more than an average contributor, you just don't have another
guy. Like, he was someone you
could
play 24 minutes a game in a playoff series. And right. They have won fewer of those guys now.
Yeah. I mean, and he, you know, arguably won Golden State one of those games in the finals, you know, arguably lost them, two of them as well. But just having that possibility, you know, of an elite performance, even if it only comes one every five games, no longer being there is huge. Well, we can look at MVP odds real quickly. Giannis plus 270, Steph plus 500, Harden plus 750, LeBron plus 850, Davis plus 950, Kawhi 950, Jokic 1100, Embiid 1600. No one after that really to me is all that intriguing. You do have Kat at plus 5,000 if you think he's going to go absolutely crazy.
Like, I think he'll have MVP numbers. Well, it's just votes. Like he would need they would have to win like 48, 49 games for him to even be considered, no matter how good his numbers are, and that's just not going to happen.
I think he would need an injury or two as well, because if Giannis has the same season he did last year and they win 63 games versus Kat's 48, I think that's probably a tiebreaker, you know, especially if Minnesota wouldn't make the playoffs.
I don't even think Giannis plus 270 is a bad bet. No. Like, even though the odds are so low, like, I think that's pretty decent. I mean, Steph 500, I think that's decent too. I think Jokic plus 1100 is decent.
Jokic 1100 I like a lot. I don't necessarily buy into LeBron or Davis quite yet, especially with in light of today's news that the Lakers probably just won't be all that good in the regular season.
Yeah, you just have to look at it. It's obviously production by the player is important, but the most important stat for MVP is team wins.
Yep.
So you have to look at the teams that are going to be up over, not even just up over 50 wins, but like 55, 56, 57 wins. So it's just, you know, I think that probably takes Steph out of it to a certain degree. So I think it's tough to bet against Giannis there.
Okay, so in addition to those odds, which were all via the FanDuel Sportsbook, we decided to come up with a few of our own props for this coming season. I know Alex has a list, I have a list. James, you have a few as well. I'll let you kick it off, Alex.
Yeah, I'm starting off with the news that LeBron is probably going to play point guard. My prop is LeBron 10 plus assists per game, which would be a career high. I have it at plus 650. I thought about going lower, but that's a pretty big number for. I mean, I know LeBron's like it. I mean, LeBron's one of the best passers in the NBA, but 10 assists a game is also a lot, and they still have other point guards on the team.
Yeah, I think that's a fun one. I mean, I think this could be a, like, remember that, what was that Heat season where he like tried to have the highest field goal percentage he possibly could?
Right.
Like, I could see this being a try to have the most assists he possibly could type of year.
Yep.
So that's a fun one.
Probably to the detriment of the team.
One prop for the Lakers that I was talking with Waylon about yesterday is over under 1.5 guards on this team that get banished from the rotation for missing open corner threes.
Oh,
I think I don't think Avery Bradley's playing like after January, because I think he's just going to miss too many threes, and LeBron's going to be like, just him or me.
Yep. I think KCP is on the hot seat. I think Troy Daniels
is very much on the hot seat. I think KCP and Rondo are kind of made men in the sense that LeBron just won't.
He just likes them.
He likes them for reasons that don't have to do with their production necessarily. So I think they're safe, but I think Troy Daniels, like, he's probably a better three-point shooter than a lot of the guys we've talked about, but LeBron's not going to care if Troy Daniels is done playing.
I could see that going the way of Reggie Bullock last year, who just didn't shoot it well in LA, and that was it. And who was the other one? Mike Muscala, who they traded for and was just god awful for a month, never heard from him again. Like, LeBron's just done with those guys. I think he gives you, like, someone like Troy Daniels gets like a 3-week tryout, basically.
Even Jared Dudley, if he's not making threes, like, he begged LeBron to be on that team, and if he's not making threes, he's not going to play.
Yeah. For the record, LeBron's highest assist per game in any season 2 years ago, when it was kind of just him on that Cleveland team, 9.1. So 10 is very much within reach. I think I would go under on 10, but I would say he'll lead the league in assists. I don't know if anybody gets to 10 per game this year.
Oh, okay. I think that's a hot take, actually.
You think so? I mean, he was like third or fourth, I think, last year.
Yeah, that's true. And
Russ, obviously, was one of the guys ahead of him.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's not that high of a take. But I think, I would love to see LeBron do the full-on, like, true point guard passing season. I think I've been waiting for that for like 15 years.
What are the odds that Trae Young leads the league in assists?
That's a good point. I think if it's not LeBron and it's not Chris Paul, it's probably Trae Young.
Like, I think he's almost the favorite with the Westbrook and Harden teaming up factor. He was at 8.1 as a rookie.
Right.
And I think he could easily get to 10.
I should have checked what he was at, like, after the All-Star break or even at the halfway point, probably closer to 10. Okay, my first one is Carmelo Anthony, over under 10 NBA games played next season.
I'm going under one.
Okay, fine. I mean, it's basically the same question. It's, will he sign with the team? I
don't
know
if it's the same question. I don't think it's a lock that if he signs, he gets to 10 games.
You think he would sign a 10-day contract?
Well, I think he would just sign and play a couple games, and they'd be like, oh, this is
working. I think he would get to 10. Like, he played 10 games for Houston last year. Okay, fine, whatever. I mean, the other part of this question is, if I told you for a fact, a team, I've looked into the future, Carmelo Anthony is signing with a team, which team would be the one that would finally pull the trigger?
So for me, I think it has to be like a fringe playoff team that needs like a reason to get people in the building, like Detroit. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I'm going Hornets.
Yeah, I could see the Hornets, the Jordan connection.
Like, just a maybe this will get more than 100 people to go to our games.
Right. Yeah, when they're on like a 17 game losing streak, they just need something. And I think at that point, like, I think Melo to date has kind of been holding out for a better situation. Like, obviously he wants to play for the Lakers. Play with somebody that he knows in LeBron, but you know, at some point he's going to just be resigned to the fact that it's going to take a bottom five team to get him back into the league. I don't think that team is going to be the Nets, even though that seems to be somewhat of a rumor this week.
Yeah, I mean, he has to try out for a bad team, and then they have to trade him to a good team for like a second round pick.
I don't think he gets to choose which team he's on anymore. He doesn't have the right to play for a good team. Doesn't. Okay, James, what is yours?
Oh, we'll use your guys's. No, okay. Oh, for which team? I said the Hornets.
Oh, no, I meant
I'm out of prop.
Okay, pass. All right, sorry.
Pass.
We kind of touched on this earlier, but Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double. I have it at 4-1. I think he's in danger for assists and rebounds. But it wouldn't surprise me. I guess it would surprise me a little bit if he got a triple-double. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what you guys think. I mean, is his usage gonna go down that much?
I'll say no. I think kind of like what we talked about before. He'll be close. You know, I think the floor for assists is probably like 8.5. He'll be right up there. But I think he'll go under. Just too much of an adjustment process.
I guess probably the rebounds is where he would. I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
but not having Steven Adams to
the Thunder situation, it was just a Westbrook gets a triple-double type of offense. Like, was everything was built sort of around that. And, I mean, D'Antoni's not going to – I mean, I think D'Antoni might try to get fired at some point this year. But
I think he will too, yeah.
I think that it's just too much to expect both the assists and the rebounds to be there.
Well, I think just having someone who hands out assists – I know Harden took a little bit of a step back last year. But, I mean, Russ handed out, like, 450 more assists than the next highest guy for OKC last year, who was Dennis Schroeder, the backup point guard. You know, so like just having another player who creates assists, you know, Paul George was, you know, he was, I think, under 3 assists per game last year, almost closer to 2. Like, there was no competition whatsoever. Like, if somebody was getting assists, it was going to be Russell Westbrook. And I think the fact that Harden is there, like, even if Westbrook, you know, has a similar usage rate, plays the same style, there just won't be quite as many opportunities, I guess, you know, per minute or per possession or however you want to frame it.
I think he'll have opportunities. Like, one thing I'm excited about for Houston is I think Westbrook will get the opportunity to run in transition with the ball, because Harden didn't really do that. They would like get the rebound, give it to Harden, and he would just kind of like jog up the court.
He would like run into defenders.
And I think Westbrook being able to just grab the ball, take off in transition will make this team really exciting. But I think you also give them the opportunity to just rack up assists that way.
All right, a couple quick Lakers ones. J.R. Smith, over under 0.5 seconds played for the Lakers this season.
I feel like I have to go over. We talked about, but I mean, you brought up, like, are they getting,
like,
are these
he'll be
players
like,
getting banished?
Take this guy, get him out of here.
Yep.
I know JR. I can handle JR.
He'll just be in LA, you know, around like mid-November when, and as soon as KCP or Troy Daniels or Caruso or whoever it is gets banished, I think he's kind of first in line. Another Lakers one. Over-under finish in the Western Conference standings, 3.5th place. So will they be third or higher or fourth or lower?
I'm going to say third or higher. For me, like the LeBron Anthony Davis connection to me is like, I can't express how excited I am and how well I think that will work. I mean, LeBron's never played like with anyone like Anthony Davis before. Just from a pick and roll, pick and pop perspective, Anthony Davis is a Defensive Player of the Year candidate. It's just hard for me to like have two top five players on one team and just be like, nah, they'll probably take fourth.
I think they're going to be outside the top three because I just think it's the Clippers, the Jazz, and the Nuggets. I just don't really have any hesitation saying those three teams will have better records than the Lakers. And yeah. It's not really about LeBron and AD. It's about the pieces around them.
Sure. Same. Well, I mean, LeBron's teams have never, for the most part, not been great regular season teams. Neither have Davis's.
I think the Spurs and Blazers are going to be right there with the Lakers in terms of how many games they win.
Yeah. I mean, I thought about making this 4.5. instead of three. I think the Spurs are right up there with those other teams that you just don't worry about continuity wise.
Like regular season, there's such a disconnect between how's this team going to do in the regular season, how's this team going to do in the playoffs when we're talking about a lot of these teams, like Nuggets and Jazz in particular. Mm-hmm. Like they could just be juggernauts in the regular season and then get bounced in the second round.
Yeah. I would almost expect that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just rifle through these last few. Back to you, Alex.
Okay. This is a future bet. Ben Simmons finishes with more career three-pointers than Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who has 23 right now. He is 25 years old, and this is the final year of his contract. So not sure how many more threes Kidd-Gilchrist will be hitting after the season.
Are we counting Chinese League?
No, this is NBA three-pointers made.
Okay, this is an NBA prep.
This one's tough for me. I actually think I would say Kidd-Gilchrist finishes with more career.
He's got a huge lead. He had 16 threes last year. Simmons has attempted 17 in his entire career.
I actually thought about making this prop. So Shaquille O'Neal hit his first three during his fourth year in the league. I want to see how many games that was. I wanted to do over under. Ben Simmons hits his first three before Shaq hit his first career three. But I changed to this. I mean, maybe the odds are. Maybe the odds are very similar on those two bets.
His camp, you know, maybe a month or so ago, I really hope you saw this, James, put out that video of him, you know, shooting threes in kind of like a workout type of setting. That made me feel less confident about him this season. Like seeing him rise up and then at the last moment switch from right to left hand to shoot that shot. And granted, he made it, but we've seen the same video each of the last three summers, and it has not translated to any confidence whatsoever.
You have to... To go from like point A to point B, you have to be okay with like looking dumb and looking bad. And I just don't think he really has that in his makeup at all. Like, whereas like for Giannis to get to the point where he's at, he's taken just dozens and dozens of really ugly threes. And it's like a testament to him that he's willing to keep doing it. I just don't see any proof that Ben Simmons is willing to beyond shacked in a fool for how bad his three-point shot looked in a game.
Okay, Charlotte Hornets. I don't remember what the actual win total is. I think it was like 22 or 23 and a half. But I'm going to amend this and say over under 16 and a half wins for the Hornets this year. Since 2000, hear me out, only eight teams have finished under 16 wins. They're somehow only one-point dogs at home against the Bulls on opening night. That's suspicious to say the least. But over under 16 and a half. Basically every other year since 2000, we've had a team that's been, you know, really, really bad. And I think they might be the team this year.
I think I almost want to address this opening night game first.
Yeah. Sure. You have the floor.
I think the Bulls are I think the Bulls are better than the Pistons. So to me, the idea of them being 1 point, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, this could be a 20-point blowout.
Vegas knows something.
Gonna have to grab my life savings for this one. I think this could be under. I wouldn't be super confident at 16.5. I think that's probably a good line.
Vegas is doing us a favor by not putting it that low, like where you can bet the under and not have to sweat it out. But you know, if you go under 16.5, you are probably sweating it out on the final couple weeks of the year.
Because if Batum misses like 30 games,
what do you mean?
That's awesome. If right, and if Rozier, what
are you saying? If Nick Batum misses 30 games,
but no, they actually
Bismack Biyombo goes down.
they actually need like everyone on their team to play 80 games.
I honestly think Rozier is a key piece in them hitting the under. Like I think you need it. Just the Terry Rozier offense. That's a. That's just going to hit that under pretty easy as long as he's the guy leading that charge.
Yeah, fair enough. I think it's safe to say we're all pretty down on Charlotte. All right, back to you.
Zion Williamson finishes with more dunks than LeBron did during his rookie year, which was 91. I set this at even odds, but I actually think Zion will get more dunks than that. It's just a little over one dunk a game, and it's hard for me to like envision a Pelicans game without Williamson getting like at least one dunk off a pick and roll or like a dunker spot catch or put back like every yeah. game.
I think he had four dunks in those 9 minutes that he played at Summer League.
Yeah.
Like he's somebody that just racks up dunks when other players, you know, get like an offensive rebound and just lay it in off the glass. Like he just dunks it because he's that athletic. Right. I would go way over on this. As long as he stays healthy, if he plays at least 65 games, I'm pretty confident he gets to 100 dunks.
He should. And I mean, because he'll be looking, dunks will be probably is one of his primary sources of offense, as opposed to LeBron.
If you're in a league that counts dunks.
Who is like confident. LeBron was like taking jump shots because he could. I don't know if Zion Williamson, like Williamson's probably going to, every time he has the ball, he's like, how can I dunk this?
Yes. I think his like dunks per shot attempt, dunks I guess, will possession. Be significantly higher than LeBron's were. Yeah. Scoring title, Harden or the field? Note that Harden won it by, I think, like 8.5 points last year. He also won it the year before.
I think this is still Harden. I don't think Westbrook's going to take that many shots away from him.
No, I don't think so either. So, and even if he does, and like if Harden drops off by 6 points per game, he's still at 30.1, which last year would have won it by 2 points.
Right, and like I don't know if Giannis is going to play enough minutes. Like Giannis could average like as many points as Harden, and he maybe almost did per 36 minutes. And I don't think too many other players that would be in that discussion need to play as many minutes as they could to get that many points.
Yeah, it's just too big of a gap.
Yep. Yeah, I think Durant, if he's healthy, you know, would have been maybe an interesting one in a new situation. I think Curry to some degree, but as we've talked about, I think the defenses are going to be able to key on Curry so much that he would have to take an enormous number of shots, you know, to get to where Harden was.
Yeah, Curry has a really good chance, but it's their season is just going to be strange.
Yep.
As evidenced by my next prop, Alec Burks, how many 30-point games? Over or under 1.5? So I looked this up. The year he was the healthiest and played like 27 minutes a game for the Jazz, he had 2 30-point games. Now he's the favorite, presumably, for sixth man of the year. I don't know. 30-point games. If Curry's out, if Curry misses 10 games, Burks is going to play 40 minutes. He's going to take 15 shots.
I'm going to go under. I can't support this. I got to wash my hands of this. Under.
Yeah, if it was 0.5, I might go over, but asking him to do 2, that's
Yeah, I don't want to be involved with this. More games started next season. Markelle Fultz or Klay Thompson?
Klay Thompson. I mean, he's going to be back in the starting line.
If you heard what Caron Butler's saying, Markelle's looking good.
Is that video out? I mean, Caron Butler like kind of teased a video where there was a picture of him and Markelle Fultz, I think, just looking at a basket, kind of reminiscing about what it was.
Butler's like a life coach now for basketball players. He's an author.
If this was a different player other than Fultz, I would say the other player because I'm totally fading the Warriors trying very hard down the stretch this year, but I just don't buy into Markelle Fultz starting many games.
Okay, I have one more quick one. First coach fired. It's not really, I'm not going to set odds or give you names or anything, but who's the first coach fired? At some point, someone's getting canned. I think Frank Vogel will certainly be on the hot seat from day one. D'Antoni counts, I guess, even if he gets himself fired.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they replaced D'Antoni's entire staff and then made a trade that he clearly was not happy with.
Yep.
There may be a mutual parting of ways like 15 games into the season. I don't think it'll be like a legit firing. I'm kind of going through teams right now. I think
Fizdale could get. I mean, they're going to need someone to blame the fact that they're just horrible. And that's a talk about a situation I wouldn't want to be a coach in, where you've just got 10 guys that are all the same and all play the same position.
I think there's coaches who could just get like let go, like Scott Brooks in Washington. Yeah. Like he just like, you know, doesn't show up to work one day and they have to put out a statement like we've mutually parted ways.
I think they just have to pay him. Yeah. They have to pay Brooks too much, and it's not like this team's doing anything anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough to come up with others because, you know, a lot of like Memphis, you know, they have no expectations. You know, a lot of the really bad teams either just hired a coach this summer or last summer. You know, a team like Atlanta, like they're not going to fire Lloyd Pierce if they don't make the playoffs.
No, I think Lloyd Pierce is actually a good coach.
What about Kenny Atkinson?
It would be so difficult for, I think, anyone to think that the reason the Nets season doesn't go well is because of Kenny Atkinson. Everything the Nets have accomplished up to this point is in large part because of like Kenny Atkinson in the front office. And if Kyrie Irving destroys this team from the inside and DeAndre Jordan destroy this team from the inside, I don't think it's Kenny Atkinson's fault for not being able to manage egos.
It will be interesting to see how much that KD, Kyrie, DeAndre, like triumvirate, like how much sway they actually end up having.
I don't think we're going to get to this one, but I do like the Raptors over the Nets this year. I saw that was one.
If you want to, real quick, more wins, Raptors
the
or
Raptors
Nets?
Over the Nets?
Yeah. I
like the Nets.
I don't
think the Raptors are going to win a single game.
Are you not worried about like a rebuild for the Raptors, like Lowry and Gasol gone
after
30
like
the Nets games?
That much.
I think they're going to, I actually think the Raptors are going to get the 4 seed. Because I just wanted to fire Marlo.
Why are you doing that?
I do think they have enough talent to like get the 4 seed in the East, but I just wouldn't bank on that. I wouldn't bank on Masai Ujiri wanting.
I think without Durant, like I think the pieces actually fit pretty well in Toronto, whereas without Durant, like I don't think the pieces fit very well at all this year in Brooklyn. Like they have two centers and like four guards that all think they should be playing a lot and like no wings. And
poor Jared Allen.
Yeah.
I do think he's going to end up starting, but that's
also the track record of Kyrie leading a team with this much, like the team, the Celtics team from 2 years ago was just so loaded and everything. But like Kyrie just doesn't lead teams that don't have like elite talent to more than like 40 wins.
All right. We'll wrap this up. James, Alex, thanks for taking the time. Go read the top 170 composite rankings that are on the NBA page on the site, and we'll, I think, probably issue an update on those in maybe 2 or 3 weeks as draft season gets closer.